Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Action Filmmaking Podcast, the podcast dedicated to breaking down action films of all types. My name is Darren Tun, and with me is my amazing co-host, Mike Messina. Today, we have a very special guest, Wade Eastwood. He has an extensive filmography, including stunt coordination and second unit directing from the Mission Impossible franchise. Wade is now working on the Mission Impossible 7 and 8. Wade, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Great.
Yeah, we're doing good, doing good. One thing I wanted to ask you right off the bat is that I know you have some military experience. I know you were sort of a military engineer when you were serving. I was wondering if that experience actually had any impact on how you do the logistical side of your larger stunts.
I don't think it really helped with the logistical side. It certainly helped with discipline and being part of a big team. I just helped with discipline generally, for me, for sure. And also a lot of the sort of hurry up and wait, I guess, you know, that element of those long days on set when you're waiting for something to happen.
Right. So I kind of wanted to jump into how movies have impacted you. I know you mentioned like Dukes of Hazzard being one of like your main inspirations, but do you have like a specific stunt that you remember really inspiring your work?
Oh, man, all the classic Bond movies for me. Really were, I mean, everything. But what was really good for me was the characters in the Bond movies. You know, you had Odd Job and you had Jaws, you know, all these different really extreme characters. And they were movies that were massive action movies, but so much fun.
Right.
They didn't take themselves too seriously. And it was like a bit tongue in cheek and you can get away with a lot. And you just went to a Bond movie to have fun. I think those, along with the sort of American TV shows that I grew up in South Africa watching, like The Dukes of Hazzard, The Fall Guy, shows like that. I was just always a film fan. I just wanted to be immersed in it. I just wanted to be in it doing something, you know?
Mike, you had something to add. Sorry.
Do you have a favorite Bond of all the actors?
Well, for me growing up, it was Roger Moore.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I loved Roger Moore. And then I got to double Pierce and Daniel later on in life as a young stuntman. And both amazing guys, really amazing guys, and you know, good mates. Pierce, absolute gentleman, as lovely as it gets.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, and Daniel, yeah, just good people. The whole Bond franchise is amazing. You know, I know I'm in the Mission world, and I'm very loyal and dedicated to the Mission team with Tom and McHugh and everyone. You know, they're
definitely
Paramount. They're amazing studio to work for, amazing company, and good people. But you know, Bond is a real family as well, and I think Mission's a big, big family. But Bond is a real family. Barbara Broccoli is sort of heads it up, and she really makes you feel like, you know, you're part of the family. So you'll have camera operators that were, you know, young loaders, and their dads were the cinematographers and special effects guys that were like kids in the workshop back in the day, and now they coordinating the films, and stunt guys the same. So they're really focused on that. I think it's important because it gets in your blood, you know, and you really care about the film.
Right, right. No, I definitely understand that. And I know that, you know, you also used to work on a lot of independent films too, starting out. And you used to actually have to work with these lower budget.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So like, I was kind of wondering, how do you kind of fake, a large scale production value, especially with like low resources? And do you have like a particular example of a time where you were able to fake large production with a stunt or a scene?
Well, you know, you try your best, but you got some terribly painted army helicopter with the paint sort of rubbing off, and you can see the white and gold underneath it, that it's, you know, for a commercial helicopter company, and because they haven't spent money on the paint. And you've got just so many elements from production design and cinematography and
right,
cheap ways of shooting where the production design and the look of the film on the screen is just going to look terrible and cheap. So the action doesn't really matter how good it is, because the film's just—it's going to be a terrible film. Some actors that are doing their best, but they're at the mercy of normally a pretty bad script and a pretty bad director and production. So I did my fair share. But on a positive note, what I did get from all those sort of early day B movies when I was 19 years old, growing up as a young stuntman, is you had to make a plan. You had to improvise a lot because I wanted big action. And what it allowed you to do is, in one movie, for example, for me, some terrible cyborg cop or, you know, whatever, they want, a human time bomb or one of those bad titles that I did back in the day. In one movie, I could do four or five fights, three or four car rolls, six or seven fire jobs, you know, and you're exhausted at the end of the day. Like, you had done stunts all day. You were burnt, you were aching. And then when I went on to the bigger films, it was like, all right, we're gonna plan this for 3 or 4 weeks. We're gonna talk about it for another 2 weeks. And then you might do a stairfall for 4 days to shoot one little stairfall of 10 stairs. I'm like, geez, I could have rolled 30 cars by now.
Right. You know? So it's a lot more prep involved.
Yeah, also because there's more story. You got better actors, better studio, better production design, better value. They're more interested in the characters, so you get attached to the characters. B-movies, the characters weren't great. The actors weren't great, really, a lot of them. So just fill the screen with lots of action. Let the audiences be visually stunned by all the action and explosions. And, the producers would always come down and just, their famous line was like, more explosions, more mortars, more explosions. Chuck some fire at it.
Yeah. So your sort of process was kind of just adding a lot of action within those sequences, just packing it with as much as you could.
Yeah, it was very frustrating for me because, I love, I watch action movies, obviously, I'm a big fan, but the movies I really love are, movies like Whiplash, things with character, things with good character. That's what I love. And I've always been very strong on that. And that's why I think, Chris McQuarrie, our director, and Tom Cruise and myself, we really get on because, I don't scale action just for the sake of it. It has to be really strongly character and story driven action. And I'm a detail freak. So it's got to be, why would you do that? You wouldn't just run and do a somersault. Why would you do a somersault where you're shooting a gun? It's like, you're just putting yourself in a disadvantage. You're putting your back to the shooter. And these movies where you do this, I'm just like, what are they doing? It suits a movie of that genre. But when you see them in action movies, sometimes I'm like, why would you do that? You've just given the guy your back. You've just made a noise. It's all those things that I always put myself in that situation. Like, what would I do, in that situation? Right. And that's where I start from normally.
So every action kind of like has to lead to another action and really make sense for the story.
Correct. And sometimes it doesn't lead to action. And sometimes there's a great character moment. And I'll be the first to put my hands up and go, oh my God, if they just embraced here, or if they just did this here, if they just did a look here, it actually gives more meaning to what they just endured or more meaning to what's coming up in the third act. So, I like the build up. I like to keep the audience connected, but to the character, not just the visual stimulation of explosions and CG fest,
Yeah, that's actually kind of funny. Do you actually watch movies with like changing them in your head in mind? Like,
always. It's exhausting. Ask my wife. It's exhausting.
Are you watching it and then just narrating how you would do things differently?
It normally starts with oh, that's ridiculous. Maybe a third word. Something. Or I get up and walk out. I walk out of more cinemas than
really
the last 10 years. I got worse. Wow. I got worse.
And your wife probably gets annoyed at you because of that.
Well, yeah, she normally stays and watches the rest of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I get up and I just walk. I just can't do it. I'm not going to mention the titles. There's too many, but
of course,
it's just not interested. I mean, there's those genres that work. Marvel works. All those genres work. Deadpool, I love.
Deadpool is amazing. Yeah,
fantastic. And I
David
love all
Leitch,
that.
Yeah,
yeah, David, and he's a good friend of mine. And he's done.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he back in the day, he used to work for me as a stuntman. He's an amazing guy, and always was hungry to be a director, and always had great creativity, and always wanted more, and is a filmmaker. And I'm so, so happy and proud of him for what he's become. He's done it. So
yeah, he started with like the John Wick series, and he's really gone on to do amazing things.
Yeah, he's done
John, and
but he's a passionate filmmaker. He's not a businessman. He's not he's not someone that was lucky and got a lucky break, although there's a lot of luck in the film industry. He's passionate about his job and his craft, and he's dedicated to it. And and that's sort of the way I am with stuff. And I'm sort of very hard. I'm very competitive. You can't just luck your way through life in this business. You've got to earn it.
There's a bit of luck and talent too in there.
Yeah, there's always a lot of luck. Unfortunately, it doesn't always go the right way.
But
there's definitely an element of luck and timing for sure.
Right. Of course.
Yeah. Speaking of, I guess, luck and timing, I was really curious about, we were sort of touching on it before, your earlier stunt work and sort of just how you survived all those crazy experience that you might not have had so much of a frame of reference for. Things like jumping out of helicopters into, I think you said, crocodile rivers and stuff like that. How did you make it through those in one piece.
Yeah, there's your luck. I mean, back in the day, it was, you know, you young kids, you were getting, you know, you're doing that sort of stuff on your weekend. For me, I was not getting paid for it. So for it to get paid, I mean, I started working, I think it was $10 US a day I was making, and that was all stunts included. And health and safety didn't exist. So, you know, you just have a producer like, hey, do you mind crashing that car? And I'm like, yeah. Like, what do you want me to do? Just roll it down that ditch. And there's no action vehicles. Has the car got a cage in it? Has it got a fuel cell in it? And, you know, is there safety, fire safety? It was like, no, there's none of that. It was just a camera operator and a grip and a you know, focus puller and a director and shouting. And it's like, yeah, hit that rock and roll that car. And that's what you did. You
just I'm assuming it probably didn't feel very safe.
Well, back when you're younger, you don't really, you know, it was all common sense to me. And I think that's why I slotted into my niche in the business and what I do, because it's all common sense. Like, I didn't want to hurt myself. I didn't want to die. So what could I do? The difference is it's not an accident, because I know I'm going to do it. So how can I do this in a way that looks dramatic and fantastic, but is not as dangerous as it looks? And, you know, and growing up in those B movies was a great platform, because there was less money involved. You could experiment more. I got hurt a lot, you know, broke some bones and got, you know, beaten and burnt. But it's, you know, I always compare it to when I get these young stunt, you know, guys and girls that come up through the business, their first movie's a Mission or a Bond, and they, you know, they get changed in their trailer, and they, you know, we work long hours and we work hard hours. That's for sure. Yeah. It doesn't matter, you know, where you are, but you know, their first movie's rubbing shoulders with, you know, Cruz or Craig, and they're all, you know, it's that's their first taste of it. And, you know, I'm like, they didn't have to go through the school of hard knocks where you, you know, your first year, you're not doing any big gags. You just bullet hit to the ground, you know, somersault off a car roof to concrete, to your back. And it's like, those were your ground pounding days, that like working for a big company, a big corporation. You're going to start, let's say, in the mailroom. You're going to do all the grunt work. You're going to fetch coffee. You're going to do this, and you're going to work your way up so that you appreciate the levels.
Right.
And a lot of the stuff today, the guys and girls don't get a chance of that. And they, you know, they're sometimes they're, you know, their egos carry away. I mean, in the stunt world, we're lucky, a lot of athletes. So they come normally from a lot of disciplined sports like martial arts and gymnastics, where they've had that real hierarchy and discipline, and that shapes them. But when you've got those that don't necessarily come from that route, you know, they need to be sort of slightly checked and put in line and being like, you know, this is not always going to happen. You're not always going to be in a big movie like this and have safety. You might be on something smaller. You got to know what you're watching for and know how to look after yourself and know how to make this safe, because at the end of the day, you know, it's just a job, and it's, you lives are at stake. You should never do anything that's dangerous. It should always be planned and executed, you know, with planning.
So you'd say it's probably, I guess, easier nowadays for new stunt, than it was for when you first started out.
Oh yeah, and then look at the era before me. I mean, go back as far as Buster Keaton, Harold Lloyd. Look at those guys.
Charlie Chaplin. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, the legends. I mean, that's those guys were lucky. My God, and skillful. But no, it's not just luck. It's like, you know, the reason I haven't broken my neck is when I landed, I would make sure that I didn't break my neck. You know,
of course,
so you've got to, obviously there's skill involved. You've got to train I trained night and day, and that's what I always get, you know, the young performers to do. It's like, I trained night and day, and then I watch movies night and day. I wanted to know everything about movies and cinematography, and what's a grip, what's a key grip, what's a dolly grip, what's a gaffer, what's the, you know, why have they got that name? Where did it come from? And you just wanted to, you know, I just wanted to be in film. Like, if you're going to do something, do it properly, or just don't bother doing it.
Yeah, definitely. So you study this stuff like all the time, right?
Yeah, I'm learning new skills now. You never stop. If you stop learning skills, you might as well just crumble up and die. I mean, I'm learning new skills now. A new skill I'm doing, particularly for this movie, is because I've got to ask Tom to do a particular thing, and then I've got to try and work out with McHugh how to film this particular thing, which I can't obviously mention. So I'll go out and do it as well, because I don't want to ask someone to do something that I wouldn't do. And also, I need to understand it enough to know the feeling I get from it and then how to film it. So yeah, obviously I'm getting older. It's not as easy to run and jump and do things like that, but I keep very fit, and I want to make sure that, you know, I'm not that sort of director that sits behind the monitors and doesn't understand what an actor that's an athlete, like Tom Cruise, for example, is going through.
So would you recommend definitely that anyone working on set sort of gets a feel for all the different, I guess, departments or steps in the process?
Definitely. I work special effects. I work props. When I was young in the business, you know, we didn't have, you know, they were shooting in my hometown. So I would like, you know, borrow guns from everyone, all my friends and uncles. And
real guns.
Real guns. We'd take the bullets out, obviously. And those, those would be the gangsters' guns, you know, that were on the table in the gambling room or something. And then the garage was full of nice cars in the main baddie's house. I get all my friends and, you know, mates, dads and stuff. Can I borrow your, you know, Mercedes? Can I borrow your this? And and I was the props guy. I was the action vehicle guy. And I was amazing. An AD, you know, because there was, the stunts weren't every day, you know, so when they weren't every day, I wanted to do other things. So, I mean, you know, not for everyone. It just depends how much you want to understand the business. I like to be on set with, if I'm in a position where I'm, you know, directing second unit, I've got three or 500 crew underneath me. I want to lead by example. I don't want to be the guy that doesn't know what he's doing or talking about. And I want to have, you know, the respect and the knowledge for myself and the respect of my peers by knowing what I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I kind of want to move on to, I guess the earlier years, like you just said, when you were younger and making movies with your friends. I listened to a podcast where you actually mentioned that you used to do stunts in your bedroom as a kid and used to pretend that your window was like a TV screen.
Yeah, and
the world was kind of like watching you through that window. And looking how you like design stunts now, like going to the physical location and acting things out, like seeing things in your head when you read the scripts. I'm kind of curious as like to how you keep, I guess, the creative spark alive.
Yeah, I mean, I get laughed at a lot by my wife and family and friends because I don't realize I'm doing it, but I watch a movie and I'm moving around the couch and I'm miming things and I'm, I mean, it looks like there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
I've always sort of been that way. So I've always disappeared into my own world in my head, you know, and imagine that I'll do something and I'll just suddenly imagine that I'm being watched from that angle and that angle. And I can see what the angles are looking at me in the street, for example.
Oh, wow.
I just do it all the time. And I don't know if it's, I'm sure other people do it. It's just something I've always done and work things out. And I'll stop on a dog walk and, you know, suddenly unscrew an antenna off a car or start to and think and go through emotion with it or something. My wife would be like, what are you doing? And I'm like,
it's kind of like you're fighting imaginary characters.
Always. If a guy came over, you know, I would attack him. I could do this with that. I could throw you over that. I was, you know, and she's like, well, you know, we just walk in the dog. Like, where did that come from? I don't know. I guess it's something
like punching the air.
Exactly. So I don't think you really ever turn off, you know, because I'm always trying to think of something different, new. And also it's very important for me. Like I like to do things that people identify with. Mm-hmm. So we've all walked down a road. We've all, you know, walked in a park or been on a subway platform pretty much, or, you know, walked in a city and there's objects and there's things around it. And I like to keep it grounded where people can identify with the character and the action, and I guess that's why I'm always thinking along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, Mike. Yeah, you go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. That almost reminds me of like horror movies, how they're always trying to tap into fears that people might be able to relate to on a day to day. The bathroom fight scene comes to mind from Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
So is that difficult to sort of balance the big theatrics of those big blockbusters with the more relatable elements of scenes?
Yeah, sometimes, but you know, I fight my corner. Tom fights his corner, and the Q fight. We all fight our corner. We really go to battle. No one has a bigger voice on a mission movie, and that's what Tom really installs, and so does McHugh. Like, there's no egos on that movie. Mm-hmm. Like, we're the creative sort of force up there with the production design and our producer Jake, and you know, so we really go into a room. There's no like, don't talk up. You've got to fight your corner and fight your idea and play devil's advocate and really make sure that the outcome at the end of it is debated to the fullest, where we're all like goosebumps and this is what we want. This is the scene, guys. This is, and Tom will act it out. Mm-hmm. And we'll, you know, sometimes a meeting will go from a meeting about something else to Tom and I like at the end of the table using a chair as a prop and tackling each other. And everyone's like, you know, this was meant to be a meeting about something else. We really, it's just really alive and organic. And it's an amazing process to be part of, because you get excited about it. And if we're excited about it, then we know the audience is going to be excited about it, you know?
Right. And you said this is at the meeting room where you guys are swinging chairs around?
Oh, yeah, often.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We'll stand up some poor assistant or some, you know, some props guy. You stand up, okay, you're the baddie, you're over there. Can I, you scream and you do, and everyone's sort of out of their place, you know, a little bit, but it's a real team effort. And, you know, Tom's very strong on that, and everyone has a voice. It's like he's not bigger than anyone else in the room just because he's, you know, he's Tom Cruise. He's
right.
It's a creative room. And if it's a creative room, it's like a writer's room. A lot of the mission is like a writer's room. We battle and we debate and we make sure that the end result we are like so happy with. Otherwise, we don't do it. We carry on debating and battling.
So everyone kind of has a say, I guess, at that room, at that meeting.
Yeah. Everyone has a say. Yeah. Which, if it's not good, we're like, nah, it's not the tone of the movie. That's not the tone of the character.
Right.
Let's move on. What about this? What about that? I mean, there's a limit, but there's a small creative group of us and we just attack, you know, we go to war.
That kind of reminds me of that book, Creativity Inc., where Ed Catmull was actually talking about how, you know, he wanted even like just any random employee to feel like they could voice like their idea, because like no one's, you know, better than the other, you know, like the egos are out of the way.
Totally. I mean, you know, I always get this, you know, why does Tom do all his own stunts? That's a normal question I get asked. It's not ego driven.
Yeah.
If I became a big name actor like Tom Cruise, there's no way in hell I'm going to let some stunt guy do all the fun stuff. No chance. that's right. All the fun stuff, you know, and that's what Tom loves when he's, you know, skydiving and doing his stuff and we're out riding bikes or something. He's just Tom, you know, having fun. He's just that kid again, you know, so it's his release. He's like, why on earth would I, you know, obviously I have a double that we use to line up and test and rehearse and do all that stuff to see if things work. But then Tom learns the skills and he does it. But it's definitely not from an ego driven part. It's from just the desire to want to do it, the fun element of it, you know? And also not the audience. We don't want the audience to, you know, we cut to a clever camera shot, morph or a wipe, or, you know, there's a stunt double, we cut to a reverse and, no, you've been cheated. Let's hold the shot. Let's stay with that character's emotion and that character's storytelling and the story
really
never
see
ends.
What's happening.
Yeah, it never ends. You're going on the whole journey with that character. It's great.
Right. And I think it goes back to your point before when like you have a whole crew that's like having fun, you know, it really just shows on screen. I think the audience can also really feel that.
Yeah. I mean, it's also hard work. I mean,
of course. Yeah.
Long grueling hours, 7 day weeks. I mean, missions are impossible. I mean, sometimes they really are. It's like it's grueling. It really is. Sometimes it's absolutely grueling and freezing locations and boiling. Like, you know, it's just, but what a job, you know, what a great job. I could be stuck in a little cubicle staring at a screen, you know?
Right. And I know you also talk about being in the process and how, I guess, like you don't even realize that about like all the work that it took, I guess. I mean, obviously, you know, the work that it took, but I guess you don't realize how much it was because it's more of like an endurance race. You know, you're kind of like in it.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, every movie I finish, I get sick. Every single movie.
You get sick.
I just get like a cold.
Oh, wow. Like, okay.
It goes without saying. And I'm always reminded by my family, but it's like, it literally takes about 2 weeks to come down off it for me.
Wow.
You throw so much into it. It's almost like, you know, you just, yeah, it just takes a little bit of time to come down off it.
It feels
you
like really,
you don't realize it, but you're on this sort of, you know, this treadmill and you're just sprinting.
Right. It feels like every movie is like a big family effort.
Yeah, big time. I mean, I've been on this movie a year. We haven't shot yet. I started a year ago, you know?
Right. Definitely. Mike, sorry. You want to jump in?
Yeah, totally. So let's see. I would love to jump into a little more specific questions about some of the movies you've worked on.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you've worked on Mission Impossible and Jack Reacher, both with Tom Cruise. I was wondering if those fighting or action styles of Jack Reacher ever lend to Ethan Hunt's character or vice versa.
No, I strongly wanted to avoid that because, you know, we don't want him always seen as Ethan. So yeah, strongly wanted to avoid that change styles and not have it. I mean, obviously there's only so many fight styles in the world, but we definitely like Ethan's character to sort of be constantly slightly evolving from the mission franchise. We can't change his style because we've seen how he fights. And
gotcha.
So we're always just trying to make it a little bit more refined, 2.0. But Ethan is such a character action with Ethan. You know what I mean?
It's
humorous. Like the bathroom fight and Fallout. He doesn't mind getting taking a hit and getting beaten up a bit. It's not, you know, that it's got to be fun. He's got to be like, he's totally by the seat of his pants as a character. He reacts and then thinks about it afterwards. He's very reactive because he has to save the world. He has to save the girl. He has to save the guy. He has to do whatever. And it's pretty close to Tom, really. You know, if someone is in trouble, he has to save them. He's just going to jump in. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, oh, shit, I'm in the water. I can't swim. Now what?
Yeah.
You know, and it's that sort of approach. And that's very true to the character of Ethan. Whereas, you know, Jack Reacher's more trained in that respect, where he's a bit more methodical, and you know, it's a different character completely. So yes, I had to make sure that myself and my team, we kept not thinking Ethan, and we watched a fight with Stoddart. I'm like, no, nope, that's an Ethan elbow, that's that, no, nope, too much Muay Thai in there, too much really? Pacing in that. Yeah So we were quite hard on trying to get that down.
Wow. Interesting. So you really tried to limit it.
Yeah, just try to make it so there was no crossover, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because Ethan's such a big character.
Definitely. I also know that, or at least I heard that the Kaisi fighting method was a sort of influence on Jack Reacher's fighting style. Does that sound right?
No, that's more a bit more Ethan-y, and that came about in one of the earlier missions. So we sort of, you know, use a little bit of that, but it's more sort of bare knuckles and Muay Thai, and it's a bunch of styles mixed together. We do a whole bunch.
Okay, interesting.
And,
so,
then the characters like Rebecca Ferguson, Ilsa, and you know, with Henry Cavill, and you know, people like that, then we can change it. I use their skills. I use what they're comfortable doing, so that I enhance something they're good at doing and comfortable doing, rather than trying to teach them a skill that they're struggling to get.
Mm-hmm.
So I watch them move. We just do loads of rehearsals, and I just sit there and watch them move, and then I throw them challenges, and I watch them move with my team. I've got the most, you know, amazing team and a great fight coordinator, Wolfgang, and we just work together with them. We watch them, and like, oh my god, she's got a great kick. Oh gosh, he's got great vertical height, or he looks like such a bruiser, like old school boxer, like rugby boy. Okay,
yeah, we got to go for Cavill, right?
Yes, yeah, so let's go bruiser with him. Let's go real rugby schoolboy bruiser, like hammer fist, right? That's him. He's right. A hammer fist, right? She's, you know, Rebecca's great with her legs. She's so buoyant and springy and energetic and vibrant, and Rebecca's just amazing. So let's have her like just all over someone. She's like a spider monk. She's just everyone all over someone. So we came up with the Ilsa thigh move, and it takes time, but to get different characters, different tools is, you know, is the hardest part. And then once you get a style for them and you know what their tool bag is, then you can start to evolve it. And you know, same in X-Men 3, taking Wolverine's characters to the next level, and having Halle Berry for the first time doing something, a Storm,
right.
You know, Juggernaut. So again, everyone had to have their little thing, so that the audience wanted to see that character, like comic book character. Okay, what's he going to do? What's she going to do?
I want to see superheroes.
It's not all the same. It's not just punch, kick, you know, throw, point, and shoot lightning bolts and stuff. It's not none of that.
Mm-hmm. So is that like your process with, I guess, like finding most characters' fighting styles, just taking all the actors into the room and just seeing what they can do?
Yeah, a lot about movement.
Gotcha.
That's everything for me. So when I hold auditions for people, they come and they can have all the skills and cars and but whatever they, I don't, you know, care unless it's for a particular sequence. I'm all about movement. Everyone has to flow. They've got to flow. They've got to be able to react, be loose, and just move. And I love it. And I'll help and push as much as I can with people that are struggling, because I want everyone to do well and, you know,
to do their best, right?
Auditions. Yeah. So it's really just movement and watching the body and watching, because everyone's different and everyone's body moves differently and they look different. And it's just great. I just love it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And I'd love to move on to a specific scene for Mission Impossible. So you have that big Halo jump sequence, jumping out of a plane.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was definitely a lot of prep work for that, partly because there was only a certain amount of daylight you could use for that one shot per day. I also know you guys were jumping out of a plane, so that probably took a lot of prep work. What was the process for that, for designing it and executing it?
Yeah, so that sequence came about because we wanted to work out how to land in Paris. I mean, how do we get into Paris? Yeah. On a train, but, you know, come across through a border point, da, da, da. We just need something more in this movie. And Tom's like, you know, like, let's pretend we're a commercial airliner, and I'm like, and I do a jump from commercial airline height, like 30,000 feet. Like, let's go, like, do a Halo.
Right.
We're like, yeah. So no actor's, you know, ever done that for real. Done it in wind tunnels and stuff. So what's the process with everything else we had to do? Don't forget, we got to do car stuff, fight stuff, normal shooting, drama, and all that sort of stuff. So we built this massive wind tunnel, the largest wind tunnel in the world, outdoor wind tunnel in the world. And every day in between setups, like, okay, I have half an hour to change the lighting on stage. Wait, meet me in the tunnel. We'd jump down to the tunnel with my skydive team. And we would do just, you know, we would just practice in the tunnel, practice moves. And we built the previs with McHugh. And, you know, this would be cool. That would be cool. How do we keep this as a one? It's too cutty. We don't want cutty because we're not cheating the audience. We're going to be doing it for real. So,
right.
We're not doing it in wind tunnel. So we've got to make this a wanna. So we would like mock up the plane ramp. And how do we come around with all the things on the floor? We've got to smooth the floor so the camera guy can walk around without tripping. Mm-hmm. And we started building it. And then it was a case of we want it at that sort of magic hour of light where we're falling into darkness. Okay, so we can only shoot that maybe first in the morning and at night. Okay, at night we can get one jump by the time we've oxygenated up to the right altitude, pressure altitude and all that. Okay, so we're going to do one a day on that time. I'm going to do four training jumps before we may be able to get away with two. Okay, we can get two. Now it's like, well, we're doing it slightly dark. We need to have a halo helmet. And they all had these massive oxygen, like a fighter pilot, which covered your face. And so all you'd see is Tom's eyes. So it's like very difficult to A, know it's him, and B, to show the emotion and the panic and
right.
Again, that sort of thing where he's just dived in and now he's like, oh shit, I don't know how to do this. But I've got to. So he so we had to see his face. So we got a helmet that I'd been using in the tunnel and skydiving, and we said, okay, can we make this pressurized? So my skydive guy, Alan, he got with another guy, he's amazing at all the rigging in the air as well. And we managed to make the helmet pressurized so that we could actually jump it, oxygen built in with a big glass face.
Hmm.
Like, great. So we go and do some test jumps. My team went off and test jumped it. And I think Norway that we went to in the end. It's like, all right, but now we need to do it at dusk. Well, I can't see your face. Now we've got to put lights in it. But the lights, if they break and got oxygenated like that, they basically would blow up in flames. So we'd have Tom Cruise's face on fire at 25,000 feet.
Right. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
But it's not a good thing. So this was This was weeks into months of no lighting system can sustain that. No, this can't happen. So we eventually got it to a point where after a lot of testing at altitude, we got it to a safe place. And then, I mean, Tom just banged out the jumps. I mean, he was just jumping. I mean, he would sometimes take off from the studio after a shot.
Wow.
Get in a helicopter, take off from the studio, have his rig on him. Get changed in his trailer, have his rig on him, fly to the drop zone, jump out the chopper above the drop zone so he didn't waste time landing and having breathing. He's with the guys in the chopper.
Right.
So now we'll go straight from the, literally take off from a drama scene, land, jump out the helicopter, land at the drop zone, go and do it again. We're running out of light, so I can get three jumps in tonight, five jumps tomorrow. Yeah, he's just very dedicated, you know, and that's how we got it done.
Yeah, he definitely sounds like he would even enjoy it doing it, like even if it wasn't like a movie being filmed.
Yeah, you're joking.
Like just on a regular basis.
On a weekend, he's always like, come, let's go for a motorbike ride. Let's go do some motocross. Let's go for a skydive. Let's just do something. It's like, if he's not really busy, you know, in post-production on something else or mixing or creating or developing something, which he's hugely busy doing. But when he gets out and him and I just train, like we've been doing a lot of training on this movie in different countries, he's in his element. When he's just sitting in a grass field, nothing around him, just the boys, and we got our rigs out or whatever we're doing, and we just like, or bikes out, and we just, you know, mountain bike, whatever we're doing. And he's just mm-hmm. like, he is 100% in his element.
Sounds like Ethan Hunt.
Yeah. He's easy to create for, because I think of every situation as if, what would I do, you know, and what would Tom do? So you're creating for a real person and a real guy that's quite capable. You're just, you know, Hollywoodizing it slightly and stretching it for to make it more visual and more fantastic, but the basis is all there already.
Right, of course. I kind of want to move into the bathroom fight really quickly, because I know we're kind of running out of time here. Mm-hmm. One guy that Mike and I are really fond of is Liang Yang. I know you've worked with him on like Fallout and Edge of Tomorrow, but I'm kind of wondering, how was he like instrumental to the action design process when it came down to specifically this bathroom fight?
So Liang and I have worked on a bunch of things together, actually. He is amazingly talented, like ridiculous, and the most humble, lovely guy probably you've ever worked with. I mean, he's incredible. And with Liang, for me, as I said before, it's about movement. And he's obviously, you know, Chinese Wushu champion.
Mm-hmm.
When he moves, I mean, for me, I literally, doesn't matter how many times I see it, I get goosebumps, my hair stand. I just love watching that guy move. He just,
that's incredible.
He's so beautiful to watch move in a different way. He's so, you know, the energy that he puts through his body. And so with that, we actually had another couple of actors that were coming for the casting, and I really wanted something different in this bathroom fight. I didn't want just another fight. And we'd worked on Henry's character, which was really strong. And Henry put in so much work. I mean, God, he'd come to rehearsals even when there was no rehearsals just to train. I mean, he worked so hard, that guy. Very professional guy. And I really pushed with McHugh. I said, listen, I'm going to film an action visit. So I built a set out of boxes and mirrors and things. And I got Liang in because I'd worked with him a bunch before. And we did it with a style that had never been really done in a mission because I loved his style. I didn't want it wushu-y. Right. But I wanted elements of it and his movement that he just can't help doing because he's been, you know, trained so hard in. And his look, his acting was so great. And I shot it.
Oh, yeah.
And literally, I showed it to McHugh on my computer and he looked at me. He's like, dude, took my computer down to Tom's trailer and he's like, this is it. And I'm like, I only have 2 more weeks before we start. I haven't got time to train someone. If you like Liang, and he's like him, dude, he's Locke. He's the character. There's no one else to look at. So it was one of those where we all just agreed. Tom was just like, I mean, Tom literally was like, he was goosebumps, eyes watering. He was so excited. He was like, he goes, I'm going to get my ass kicked in this. He goes, it's brilliant. And it was just one of those. And it was like a real, really exciting thing. It's very rare that it happens when, you know, normally I'll take an action business like, well, I like this, but I need this and we need to make sure we've got this. And I want to bring her in because I have a scene outside with her later with him. And it was just a case of, that's it, let's do it. You know, so that scene was quite close. My team did an amazing job, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. With everyone. The guys worked really hard. And yeah, we did something that we're proud of. And that's the big thing. You've got to be proud of it, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely a standout scene. One part that really stood out to me personally was when he's picking up that pipe from the bottom of the sink and using that. So can you talk a little bit about where that idea came from and what the process is like for choreographing such a weird object?
You're asking that because you know the answer, don't you? From another interview I did.
I don't actually. I should say that I did because I did my homework, but I don't.
No, it was a bit weird. I got called up on it as being a bit strange, but I don't care. It's yeah, so again, little things like what I was saying earlier in the street. I think I was at the Dorchester Hotel or some hotel in London or the Haymarket. I think it was at the Haymarket Hotel in London with my wife. Just went out for a drink and some dinner. And I happened to be, I went to the toilet and I've been thinking about the bathroom fight. And I just lay on the floor and I was like, if I fell on the floor, if I got hit back here from the store, and I looked around looking up and I saw the P-trap under the sink, and I just finished designing a house and building a house. So I knew all about P-traps and plumbers and how much money they charged me to do my P-traps and stuff. So I was like, I sort of transfixed it. I'm like, I don't want the normal. I don't want to take the tap thing off with a spike under the tapped head. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. Toilet roll hole, the door handle. And I sort of ended up on the floor, like wriggling the P-trap. Like, but if I pulled this out, it was like broken shop metal. It was an aluminum one or something. And, you know, and then obviously, people obviously walk in and look at you because you're lying on the floor in the bathroom under the sink in a, you know, nice hotel, and you know, stand up and apologize and they don't talk to you. And obviously you walk out and you think, oh, so that's, you know, I get lots of moments like that. And basically that's where it came from.
That's fantastic. I love it.
And the same actually with the water bottle in Jack Reacher, the little water bottle. I don't know if you remember at the plane when he's sitting next to the guy and he hits him with a water bottle cap.
Yeah.
I was flying from LA to New Orleans where we shot Jack Reacher, and they give you on the Delta flight, they give you those little horrible stubby water bottle things that taste like plastic when you drink the water, but they really short and stubby. And I had it in my hand and I was like looking at this thing. I was like, God, this thing's like bubbling. It's so full of like plastic and stuff.
Yeah.
And I squeezed it. And when I squeezed it, the bottle head, the head of the bottle, the cap,
yeah,
it was so hard hitting it in my hand. And then I twiddle around, I looked at the guy next to me. He didn't know. I just sort of leant back in my seat. I'm like, geez, I could give him a temple shot from here and it would knock him out.
Oh my goodness. I'm assuming your friends are probably like, don't give Wade any objects. He's going to use it as a weapon.
Well, and that's why I go back to, I love it normal because everyone can relate to that. You know what I mean?
Right.
On a plane or something. And I started doing it. And then anyway, I started playing with it. And across the way from me was an actor going back to New Orleans to do a big TV series, like a CSI, one of those big TV series. And he noticed me, not the guy next to me. He was across the aisle. And he's like, you're gonna hit someone with that? And he was like, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I was like, I'm just thinking about something for a film in the film industry. And I was trying to create something. And he was like, is that going to be a weapon? I said, well, it could be. And I started talking to him across this guy. So he calls the stewardess and he's like, excuse me, ma'am. He's like, could you collect all the empty water bottles for my my friend over here? So basically, I did the flight back and forth 2 or 3 times because you couldn't buy those water bottles that size. So on my trips, I would just collect them and then give them to props. So we had like 20 or 30 of them. And then if we needed them in the movie, that's how we got them. And that's how that little scene evolved, a little bit of trivia there.
Interesting. Yeah, it's definitely fantastic that you're bringing these creative elements into these scenes. That's more than just kicking or punching or explosions and stuff like that. Is there anything else actually that you think can really elevate an action scene to the next level that's in addition to the straight up punches and choreography?
Character and emotion. You know, if you feel for the person getting beaten or the person doing the beating, you're connected to the character. And it's like, you know, a lot of these action movies, they make the mistake of just going too fast. And it's action, 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 action. It's like, why were we doing that again? Why were we fighting? Oh, because his wife's been kidnapped. Or was it because he was angry at that guy? Because I can't remember. It was just a really cool fight, but I don't know why they did it. And I just like building the character strong enough that you're emotionally connected. And if you're emotionally connected, it doesn't really matter what they do. You're in it with them, and you want them to win.
Right. I want to move on to our next question because I know we don't really have too much time here, but I know that we touched upon specific breakdowns from the Mission Impossible series. I know this next movie, it was announced that Tom actually wanted to film this next movie in space in collaboration with Elon Musk and SpaceX. What are you most excited for audiences to see in this movie, if you're allowed to tell us anything, I guess?
Yeah, I can't comment on that movie. I'm very excited to do that. One license I don't have yet. But no, I can't really give any information on that. It's
totally understandable.
No one knows.
Yeah. And I'm assuming because like the production has halted already, it's like with the coronavirus and everything, it's been a little bit difficult.
Yeah, well, there's no coronavirus in space, so we've got to go somewhere.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate your time. We do kind of want to end it off on like one final question. It's kind of like a fun question, but we were kind of wondering, who would you think would win in a fight? If it was Ethan Hunt from Mission Impossible, Cage from Edge of Tomorrow, or Jack Reacher?
Oh, I think, Cage without his suit wasn't really much. Right. He was very confused by his whole situation and the sort of, you know, constantly repeating. So he was learning as he went. Jack Reacher and Ethan would be an interesting one. I think Ethan's relentlessness of like, I have to save the day would have the edge. I'm going to go Ethan.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I know you have to go right now. So thank you so much for your time. Just taking the time out to speak with us. We really appreciated this. We love hearing your stories. And
absolute pleasure, guys. I'm really glad to share it. You know, it's an interesting job. It's an interesting business. And it's got some really cool moments. It's a lot of hard work, but it's great to be able to share it and you know, hopefully inspire some people that, you know, thinking about getting into the business too.
Right, of course. And we'd probably love to have you back for part two if you're up for it.
Anytime, guys.
Amazing.
Awesome.
All right.
Perfect. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.